Hello, and welcome to Betty in the Sky with a Suitcase. I'm Betty, Flight Attendant Betty, and in this episode, I had collected a bunch of stories that were ever so slightly could possibly be considered politically incorrect or offensive. They're stories about bodily functions and maybe a couple ethnic stereotypes. But, you know, I decided to do them anyway because they all are so very funny, and I really doubt that anyone would truly be offensive. And at the end of the episode, there will be a story that hopefully should bring everything full circle. And that story is from the Himalayas.
Okay, this is a night flight, and everyone's asleep, or almost everyone's asleep. But somebody in the forward part of the coach cabin is passing a lot of gas. And it stings. So this friend of mine decides he's going to go find out who is doing this. It is just grossing out the whole cabin. So he goes walking through the cabin, and he's slowly eyeing each and every person. And this one woman looks at him, and she says, "Don't you be looking at me. It wasn't me. It was him over there. I saw him lift his leg."
We were doing Desert Storm. Actually, was Desert Shield, getting ready for the Desert Storm, carrying cargo for the Special Forces guys. And
where were you?
We're in Pope Air Force Base, out near where the Special Forces guys stage out of South Carolina, and taking their stuff back and forth over to Saudi Arabia. We had all kinds of different things that we carried for them. Anyway, the guy who was loading everything came up to me and told me that I'd never be able to guess what we had just loaded on.
And
I went through a bunch of the cosmic weapons that I was aware of that those guys were using. And he was laughing. He said, "You'll absolutely never guess." And I went through some more, and I did not guess. And he told me we had one pallet of Kotex on board. Evidently, the ladies had gotten over there. The planners had forgotten that maybe they needed to plan for this situation. And so this entire pallet was devoted to them, and actually had priority over some of these other things that we...
Yeah, you would have never guessed that.
I never would have. And he said, "Well, in a way, it is kind of a secret weapon, because during that time of the month, they're retaining water really well over there in the desert, and they're really vicious."
There was a very heavy set person sitting at the exit row.
And very heavy set.
These days you cannot sit at the exit row if you need a seatbelt extension.
So you can't even get out the door. How can you help other people get out the door in case of an emergency?
That puts us in a very awkward situation these days, because we have to tell people they can't sit there. So there's this guy that we all know who's very German.
Very German. He's from Deutschland. And so the passenger said, "Well, why can't I sit here?" And he just says it how it is. "Yeah, because you're too fat."
Yeah, it's one of those beautiful sunsets. Going into Los Angeles, and they were doing this, what they call a civitarabo, landing to the west, and it was a clear, wonderful day. And so planes were lined up, they had their lights on, and they were all kind of lined up for visuals, and approach control was trying to vector in a Japan Airlines JL out from the north and then bring him south, and they're eventually going to turn him to the west with the sun setting out over the Pacific. Everybody was enjoying the nice evening. There was a gap between an airplane and then an American, and they were going to take JL and stick it in between those two airplanes. It was going to lead American in. And American was asked by approach control, "American 123, do you see JL? He's at 2 o'clock, big 747. And what he's trying to do is get the, the American to say they see him so he can turn him loose visually. And, of course, everybody along the arrival, because they're lined up for 100 miles back out, could see this big 747 lumbering to the south to get in line. American goes negative. American 121, 123 doesn't see the JL. Of course, everybody's astounded because everybody in the entire approach pattern could see this 747 lumbering around. So approach control from LAX, SoCal is what they call it, once again says, American 123, you got to be able to see it now. It's 1 o'clock. I'll put him in front of you for visual to runway 25 left. Once again, American comes back. Negative contact on JL. And now approach control is just exasperated because everybody else can see this airplane. He goes, American 123, you can't miss him. He's now 12 o'clock. He's 10 miles. Big 747. You got to have him in sight. American snaps back. Negative. I told you I didn't have those damn Japs in sight. There's this dead silence on the radio. And then suddenly this little Japanese voice comes on and goes, "Oh, look into the sun, Yankee dog."
Medical situations can be very sticky. We used to have air phones on all the aircraft types. Now there are some aircraft types that don't have air phones in the cabin. We have a medical service that we can contact 24 hours a day when there is something happening on board that we don't know how to deal with and we need medical advice. But on those flights now that don't have the airphone in the cabin, we have to ask the pilots to help. They have to contact the medical people and then relay it back to us. So now they have to get involved in some of those medical sticky situations also.
We're flying from Dallas to Seattle. Get up to altitude, and we got a pretty full flight. And I got a call from the flight attendant in the back of the passenger experiencing some pain in his upper groin, lower upper leg area. Oh, really? So now you know we got to do all the coordination with the radars. We don't have the air phones on board. So I'm basically having the first officer flying and talking on the radio, and I'm thinking we're about over Denver when this happens. I'm thinking we're spiraling down into Denver. It's me. First thing I think is possible heart attack, stroke, something like that. Well, as time goes on, as I get all the pieces of the puzzle, it's taking forever to coordinate. As you know, I'm trying to talk to them and talk to the air med people and all that through UMPs. So they start asking this question, where exactly is the pain directed? Well, it turns out that the pain is directed in his testicle area. So we proceed with all these pointed questions about, find out if he has, one of the things that stood out, he asked a whole bunch of these series of questions, and this is a doctor on the other end, he goes, find if there's a bloody discharge. I'm thinking, oh great, this is good, this is really good, I'm really enjoying this, you know. So we get to the bottom, and it turns out that the guy comes back and it sounds to me like he has testicular torsion. I said, what? Yes, sir. I said, testicular torsion.
What's that?
Twisted gonads, I guess. I said, oh, that's very interesting. And he said, well, I said, there's been a lot of pain in the manifold and shortening. He goes, well, it should be okay. It should be okay, but... just keep us posted. And so, we finally get to Seattle, thank goodness. We get to the airway in Seattle. We had the paramedics meet the flight. This poor guy couldn't even walk down the aisle. He needed like some assistance, and they put him like in a wheelchair or something down the stretch. Took him off to the hospital or something.
How did they get him twisted?
I didn't ask.
When I was traveling in India, we took some very, very long car rides, taxi rides, and traveling by car in India is just basically a nightmare. There's just animals in the road and people on bikes with babies, and there's nobody goes in any direction. Everybody just honks and goes wherever they want. Cars keep going straight at each other really pretty fast until the very last second, and then they swerve to get out of the way. It's like playing chicken. It's very, very stressful. And the other part about a long drive, like almost an 8-hour drive in a car in India, is that you have to be so very careful not to get sick there. You have to be so careful about what you eat that on this long 8-hour car ride my friends and I were taking, we weren't going to like eat on the side of the road. And so we had prepared for this before we went, and we had brought things like granola bars and trail mix and
beef jerky just for those times where we knew we would not be able to eat. And on this very long taxi ride, we had 3 flat tires along the road. So we had already were very feeling very thankful for our taxi driver to drive us all this way. It was very difficult. And we were eating some beef jerky in the taxi, and we felt rude not offering the taxi driver some, since, you know, he hadn't eaten either. So we went ahead and offered him some, thinking that he must know what it was, but apparently he didn't, because he took some of the beef jerky and he ate it, and he immediately stopped the car, got out. On the side of the road, there was this very dirty pipe with water dripping out of it, and he gets under there, and he put his head under it, and he stuck his tongue out. He was trying to, you know, get, you know, wash his mouth out of this offensive thing, because we had basically, you know, he was Hindu, and we had given him cow, and it's sacred, and here we're giving him, you know, it's it's very uncomfortable, and here we were just trying to be polite, and instead, we were completely offensive.
In Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, now we're doing the drug air intercept mission in the Falcon, and we did the F-16 radar in there, the APG-66 with the Westinghouse FLIR. And we would do, we would chase the bad guys coming in the United States to drop drugs. One of our operating bases was Gitmo. I've spent so much time in Gitmo, sitting there at the officers' club, throwing rocks at land crabs, waiting for, you know, Julio Iglesias to come up and go get them. Anyway, so we're sitting there, and one of the things with Gitmo is, you know, you have a fence line with about, I'd say it's a quarter mile final for runway, I want to say it's 10. It's been a while since I've been there. It's called the fence line, you know, and you cannot be west of the fence, or else the Cubans will shoot at you. At worst, the best, you're going to get a violation and be in big trouble. So anyway, we all sit there when we're not flying. The airplane's ready to go. And we grade and, you know, talk crap about the guys that have come in on short final for runway 10. All of a sudden, we hear, we're sitting there at the O Club, we hear this piece of crap turboprop coming behind us. Like right over the Oak Club, behind us. It's obviously clearly west of the fence, clearly in deep kimchi, right? Blah, 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 blah. What it was is a Cuban turboprop was coming to drop off their pilot to retrieve a MiG-23 that had defected to Gitmo about a week earlier, before we had gotten there. So they had a MiG-23 on the ramp, and the Cubans, of course, they don't care about Cuban airspace. They're flying right over. They're dropping off the guy to get their plane. So we're like, oh, that's cool. Okay, that's hot shit. Anyway, so we're sitting there. Of course, you know, Julio's not coming up yet. So next thing we hear is, you know, big 23 fire off. Starts getting up to the hold short line. Gets up there. Afterburner. Full vertical. Full loop. You know, real nice little air show. Gives about 20 minutes of air show. Wings swinging up, forward, backward. Doing his Cuban 8 shit, I guess, because he's a Cuban. You can do that, you know. And the next thing you know, he's out of there. Okay, so we all think that's really cool. And, you know, we're done with our deployment. We're talking to base ops getting out of there. And we say, yeah, did everybody see the MiG-23? That was pretty cool. The MiG-23 did that thing. And the base ops guy said, yeah, it was the first time the guy had a full bag of gas. Because normally the Cubans, they don't give them a full bag of gas because they'll defect. So, of course, the Navy, they just filled them up. So he was like, oh, my God, man. Ugh, let's see if this thing doesn't afterburn.
That's why he was playing. So we were flying an all-nighter, and one of our co-workers' last name, great guy, his last name is Ho. So I was asking him what his kids' names were, and then we got into a game called Name the Ho. So we came up with some, and let's see. First we got
Tally Ho.
We got Heave Ho.
We have Heidi Ho. Ivan Ho.
Gung Ho.
We have Miho.
Idaho.
Yo Ho. A pirate's life for me.
And then we got Ima Ho. Did we get Ima already? How about
Yura?
Yura Ho.
I Ho.
Ho Ho. And what we decided at the end is that everybody wants to be a ho.
Everyone wants to be a ho. Me ho, you ho. We are all hoes.
Yeah. We're all happy hoes.
Okay, so I was on approach into Houston and cleaning up everything in the galley, getting ready for landing. And I went to wash my hands right before landing. I opened the door, and there is a woman in a sari in the bathroom, and she has her back to me, and her sari hiked all the way up, and she's got towels, the hand towels from the lavatory, and she's got them kind of up inside of her cleaning herself. So I quickly...
Wait, excuse me, she has what?
The hand towels, the ones used to... She was using them to clean herself.
Her private areas.
Her private areas, quite well, she was trying to clean herself. Anyway, she looked like she was doing a pretty good job there. Anyway, so I slammed the door shut, hoping that she didn't know that I just opened the door on her and seen what she was doing. I knocked on the door and I said, ma'am, you have to come out. Sit down, take your seat. We're getting ready to land. Well, she came out of the bathroom and she went to hand me those towels.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, like I said earlier, there'd be a story that would bring everything full circle. And that full circle comes in the form of a rainbow. I was hiking in the Himalayas with a friend for a week, and it was in the middle of the night, basically, one morning, where our guide woke us up and said we should hike to the top of this hill to get a good view of the sun coming up, and you could see Everest, which does sound fabulous, except for when you don't sleep very well because you're at a high altitude and you have a headache from the altitude, and you're kind of like, oh, I don't want to get up and hike up there. Well, I did anyway, of course, and got up to the top of the hill, and boy, was I rewarded. Actually saw a full circle rainbow. I honestly didn't know that rainbows came full circle. I thought it was always the normal half circle rainbow like we always see. But I guess in some parts of the world at certain altitudes you can see the actual whole rainbow. And not only was it a full circle rainbow, but I could see my reflection in the center of the rainbow. And I kept thinking it must not really actually be me that I'm seeing in there. You know, so I started waving my arms and I could see myself moving in the center of the rainbow. It was almost like the famous picture, you know, with the naked man, his arms outstretched in the circle. I believe that's Da Vinci. And no reason for this story was, in case anybody was at all slightly offended at any of the slightly off color stories, hopefully it all comes full circle, like all the colors of the rainbow. Full circle rainbow. Unfortunately, gotta go all the way to the Himalayas to see that. Well, that's about it for this episode of Betty in the Sky with a Suitcase. Hope you'll join me again next time so we can travel the world together.